Hello and welcome to the Plain English Cybersecurity Podcast. This is episode number 2 of our podcast. We're just kicking things off. The goal of this podcast is to help anybody and everybody get better at cybersecurity and understand cybersecurity and explain things in plain English. So that is our goal, and that's what we're going to try to do. As a review from last week's episode, we just talked generally about what is cybersecurity. What's the definition of cybersecurity? What is the CIA triad? We also talked about different types of threats and the threat landscape. And we also talked about other key terms like attack vector, vulnerabilities, exploits, and risks. In addition to all that, we talked about some common threats and attacks, such as malware, viruses, worms, trojans, ransomware, social engineering, network attacks, insider threats. We went through a lot of things last week. So we want to build on last week's episode and continue our kind of just cybersecurity 101 basics here. Our topics of discussion for today are going to be essentially how to secure your systems, what are like the best practices to secure your systems as far as passwords go, multi-factor authentication, all kinds of fun stuff like that. So we'll dive into that. We'll also dive into software updates, patch management, endpoint protection, and then I'm going to try to also get into some networking concepts as well, because you know, if you don't understand these basic concepts, it makes it really difficult to piece everything together. So understanding all of the basics about IT and about networking and servers and all that kind of fun stuff really helps you, you know, kind of put everything into perspective, put it all together. All the pieces of the puzzle can be put together a lot easier and a lot better if you understand all those basics. So we're going to try to dive into some of those as well here today. All right. So to kick things off here, by the way, today is May the 8th of 2025. This is episode number 2. And my name is Eric English. I'm the host of this podcast. I'm going to run through these, you know, cybersecurity 101 topics today. And we'll just kind of jump right in here. So one of the bigger things, and this can be useful not only at work, but in your home life too, passwords. Passwords are such an easy thing for hackers to steal, to, you know, crack your password, to guess your password. Passwords are the bane of all cybersecurity professionals' existence because they're so easy. And you can guess people's passwords very, very easily. Most people use things that are easy to remember, of course, right? You don't want to make it something you can't remember because that defeats the purpose. So people, and you know, of course, are going to use things like their dog's name, or the year that they were born, or their kids' names with the year that they were born. So finding this type of information is actually pretty easy when you go to social media. If your profiles are public and you post a bunch of stuff about your life on social media and all that information is public, well, guess what? Hackers can guess what your password is in a lot of cases. Now, there are plenty of other ways for hackers to guess a password or crack a password. So we will talk about some of those as well, but just try to stick with the basics here today. So a strong password would be something like a sentence, like a full sentence with spaces, you know, capitalization, punctuation. That would be a good password. So use a full sentence, right? Just use punctuation, spaces, everything. That's a great password. So tips and tricks like that are things that I don't think most people think about when they're creating a password. They try to make it, you know, all the characters together, no spaces. But the space bar is your friend. You know, use that in your passwords, make them super secure, and really make it easier to remember as well. So that's just one little tip for the password side of things. But really, too, you want to make sure any chance that you get that you're using a password manager wherever possible. You know, in some cases, you know, you feel like, oh, I don't want to use a password manager. It's too much to deal with, you know, all those kinds of things. However, they're so easy nowadays. And there are some free password managers out there that you can. And just because they're free doesn't mean that they're not good. Bitwarden is probably your number one free password manager. There are some others out there. However, in my opinion, at least, I think Bitwarden is the easiest to use. It has a lot of the similar features as all these, paid password managers do. But really, you know, if you're going to use a password manager, make sure that the password you use to get into the password manager is very strong. Like we just suggested, use a full sentence. You know, use spaces, use punctuation. You know, use multiple words in a sentence that only you would remember that sentence, right? It could be something about, you know, your kid's favorite sport is something. Like, if your kid's name is Sally and her favorite sport is soccer, you could say, you know, your password could be Sally loves to play soccer on Saturdays, period. It's a lot of S's, isn't it? But you get what I'm saying, right? So, you know, that's a very strong password. It's, you know, numerous characters, over 20 characters, because it's a full sentence, right? Use spaces. And then for your password manager, you 100% have to use what's called multi-factor authentication. That kind of leads us into our next piece here. Multi-factor authentication is kind of the gold standard nowadays in password and just authentication in general. So let's step through what is multi-factor authentication. What does that even mean? Multi-factor? What are factors? I don't understand. So a factor for multi-factor could be something like something you have, something you are, and something you know. Well, what the heck are those? Right? Let's get into those. So something you know would be your password. Okay? So a password is something you know. So that's one factor, something you know. All right? That factor could also be security questions, if you want to think about it from that angle, right? Security questions are also something you know. So you could go at it that way, but something you know is one factor. Something you are. Now, what could that be? Something you are is biometrics. You are human. You have a fingerprint, right? I hope, unless you burned your fingerprints off for some reason. You have a retina. You have an iris that you can scan for biometrics. So biometrics would be something you are. And then the last factor is something you have. So something you have could be as easy as your cell phone. All of us carry our cell phones around nowadays. I think it's rare when we don't. So something you have would be your cell phone. And on your cell phone, you could use an authenticator app that allows you to use that as another factor. So no one else has your cell phone with that authenticator app. Only you have that cell phone with that authenticator app. So those, again, are the things, the three different types of factors with multi-factor authentication. So MFA, or multi-factor authentication, you, of course, need to use multiple factors to log in to a service. So, for example, you would use your username and password on pretty much every service. That's kind of the number one factor nowadays, unfortunately. But username and password would be first. Then from there, what other factors can you use? Well, really depends on the service that you're logging into. What do they support? What other factors does your bank support, right? What other factors does Facebook support? Yeah, it just depends, again, on what you're logging into. So in a perfect world, you would use your username and password as something you know as your first factor. And then you would use something you have in your cell phone as your second factor. And on your cell phone, again, you're going to have an authenticator app that has a rotating code that you're going to type into that website. Now, something you are is becoming very popular nowadays, especially with the adoption of what are called passkeys. Passkeys are kind of the new password lists. We're trying to get away from passwords in cybersecurity because, as I just mentioned, they're such an easy attack vector. So we're trying to use passkeys, and we're trying to use, you know, the something you are factor. You know, it's very hard to steal someone's biometrics, right? Unless someone runs up to you and, you know, somehow grabs your fingerprint, which is, I think, unlikely, especially from hackers in some foreign country. But, you know, these are the things that we want to look at when we're talking about, you know, multi-factor authentication. We want to have multiple factors to log in to any system, right? It doesn't matter what that system is. If you just use a username and password, well, guess what? that can be very easily guessed. And if that's the only thing stopping a hacker from getting in, and they can go guess your password by looking at your Facebook page, is that secure? Definitely not, right? So that's why you want to have these multiple factors. And this is why you see all your friends' Facebook accounts get hacked, because they're only securing it with a password. And that password is something very generic and very easy to guess. So multi-factor authentication is a massive piece of cybersecurity. Passkeys are becoming extremely popular. We're trying to move to more passwordless, which is great. And I'm this is kind of a rant, I guess you could say, but I'm kind of curious to see if multi-factor is still necessary when we completely get away from using passwords. Do we need to have multiple factors at that point? That's going to be something we'll have to wait and see. But for now, it's a password. Passwords are kind of the gold standard, unfortunately. But as, you know, technology progresses, as, you know, everything progresses and gets more and more secure, passwords are going to go away. So we're going to have something you are, which is your biometrics, and something you have. Those are going to be the two primary factors, because those are way harder to obtain if you're a remote hacker. If I'm in, you know, if I'm in Russia trying to hack you, well, I don't have your fingerprint. I don't have something that you have in your possession. I don't have your cell phone. So unless, you know, you somehow hacked into the cell phone. Regardless, though, you know, it's extremely rare that you would see that kind of attack vector with the something you have. So that's why, you know, we always lean towards having multiple factors to log into any system. Okay, so we've talked about passwords, I think, quite a bit, and probably enough for everyone's taste. We've talked about MFA, or multi-factor authentication. Something else in IT and in cybersecurity in general is all of the acronym. You got to be able to talk the talk in a lot of cases, and you need to know what those acronyms stand for. There are a lot. And really, knowing those acronyms is going to help you tremendously, because if you don't know, if you're in a conversation with someone who's very technical in nature, and they're prattling off all these acronyms and you don't know what they're saying, well, that could be a challenge, right? So studying up on those acronyms really, really helps you not only understand the lingo, but be able to talk the talk with other IT and cybersecurity professionals. It is extremely important to understand those, to at least know what the acronym stands for and a very basic understanding of what it is. Because IT is all about acronyms, and there's new acronyms coming out all the time. So it's something you really have to stay on top of. So I would highly recommend, especially if you're new to IT or new to cybersecurity and you're trying to get into this space, learning all those acronyms is going to be pivotal. It's really going to help you be able to talk the talk. And as you start talking the talk, you can walk the walk a lot easier too. All right, acronyms were not something I had on the agenda, but I wanted to throw that out there too, because as we're going through this podcast, I'm going to be saying a lot of acronyms. I'm going to try to explain what those mean as best we can and help define each of those acronyms for you. However, you know, it's good to refresh yourself. It's good to go do some self-study on these acronyms, because there are a lot, and there's a lot of lingo that is very hard to keep up with if you don't know what those acronyms are. And I wouldn't, one last thing on acronyms, I wouldn't focus solely on cybersecurity acronyms. I would focus on all IT acronyms as well. That way you have a full picture and you can talk to, you know, IT professionals as well as security professionals, right? So having an understanding of both is really where you want to be. I would even get into, you know, developer acronyms, like what, because you're going to be dealing with IT professionals, you're going to be dealing with cybersecurity professionals, you're going to be dealing with developers. There's all these different branches of IT, and in cybersecurity as well, there's a lot of different branches of it. So being able to talk the talk with all those different branches is going to be pivotal in your IT career. So I highly recommend, you know, reviewing those, staying up to date with them as best you can, get a at least a basic understanding of what those acronyms are. Okay, so next topic, again, this is kind of the best practices, if you want to call it that, but you know, password security is obviously a massive thing we all have to think about. But email is still the number one threat vector, which is amazing to think about because it's been the number one threat vector since the dawn of the internet, pretty much. There was a study done by Deloitte in, I think, 2021, maybe 2022, where they found that 91% of all breaches started with a phishing email. So let's say that again. 91% of all breaches started with a phishing email. Holy smokes, right? That's crazy to think about. So this is where it's very important that email security is top of your list. You want to make sure that you are very careful with your own personal email, number one, because there's scams that come through. We've all seen the, you know, your long lost brother or cousin or Nigerian prince or whatever it is. We've all seen those types of scams. They're getting way more sophisticated in these scams. Okay, so that's just one that everyone knows and people still fall for it, unfortunately, but email security is massive. You also have phishing emails, and here's where phishing gets really hairy. So you have someone at your business doing business with someone else at another company. They've been doing business for years, right? They know each other. They go to lunch all the time. You know, they know each other's families. Like, you know this person, right? You know, you've known them forever, for years and years and years, done business for years. One day you get an email from them that seems kind of out of the blue, and it's got a link. And it says, hey, please review this proposal or whatever it is. Well, that is where phishing gets really, really tricky because people that you know and that you work with, people that you do business with, even your friends and family, they get hacked, right? So when your friends and family and other businesses and colleagues get hacked, the hackers then try to hack you. So this is where you get an email from someone that you know and trust and you've done business with them for years. And it's got a link. What do you do? That's where you got to be very careful because these links are oftentimes phishing, and especially if it's out of the blue like that, you're not expecting it. So email security is so important. And even with the best email filters and security gateways and whatever else you want to throw out there, whatever other layers, phishing emails still slip by. Happens every day at every business. And this is why phishing is still so prevalent nowadays. So to kind of backtrack a little bit to, you know, email security is massive, still the number one threat vector. Now that paradigm is changing a little bit. Hackers are able to, you know, scan the entire internet with tools like Shodan, which scan it for you, and all you have to do is go kind of search. This allows hackers to now see, oh, hey, there's some open ports on this firewall that I might be able to get into. And oh, hey, there's a vulnerability. Now I can exploit that vulnerability like we talked about last week. Once I exploit that vulnerability, now I can get into that server and then pivot into other internal systems. So, you know, email is still the easiest way. You know, you can also combine email phishing with social engineering, which we will talk about too in depth. But social engineering, just real quick, is tricking somebody, you know, at its core. You are tricking someone. You are playing a trick on them, tricking them into thinking that, you know, you are someone else, tricking them to clicking on a link, tricking them to do something that they otherwise wouldn't do. And so when you socially engineer someone, you trick them into doing something that they wouldn't normally do, that you're wanting them to do so that you can then hack their system. So that's kind of the social engineering side, and email phishing falls into that social engineering category. So how do you stop email phishing? These are, you know, massive topics that I do want to break down a lot further. But first and foremost, you need to have a good email security gateway. An email security gateway is basically a system that filters every incoming and every outgoing email from your domain or domains. So this allows you to filter things, block things, do all kinds of fun stuff, email related. So those email security gateways are extremely important. Again, though, like I said earlier, with that trusted business partner or that trusted person, that's when these email gateways fall short. Because it's a trusted sender. You've been communicating with that person for years. The email gateway learns over time with all this AI stuff going on. It's going to learn over time that, oh yeah, you communicate with this person all the time. And yeah, you share links with each other all the time. You share attachments with each other all the time. So the email gateway thinks that, yeah, that's normal. And guess what? That one time your friend gets hacked or your business partner gets hacked, then boom, you're hacked, right? If you click on that link. So you can still bypass these email gateways. These are still the, you know, next to endpoint security. Email security is right there. I would say like 1A, 1B. Email security, you got to have an email filter of some sort. And then endpoint security would be your quote-unquote antivirus, which nowadays is called EDR, which is another acronym, I know, but it's Endpoint Detection and Response. EDR is kind of the newer version of antivirus. So EDR is definitely where you want to get to nowadays. You don't want the old legacy antivirus in a business environment. It just doesn't cut it nowadays. Hackers are way too sophisticated, and the old school antivirus that was signature based just doesn't cut it anymore. So you want to use an endpoint detection and response tool, or EDR tool. Now, I'm diving into too many topics here, but let's go back to email security. So how do you prevent one of your employees from being compromised? Well, this goes back to what we were just talking about with a good password and multi-factor authentication. Multi-factor authentication is that layer of security, that extra factor that an attacker does not have. So let's throw out an example here. If you get that phishing email from your trusted business partner, you click on the link. As soon as you click that link, it takes you to a weird website, but it's got a Microsoft logo on the website, and it's got a login page, a Microsoft login page. And you think, okay, I just need to log into my Microsoft account. Well, little do you know, that login page is actually phishing your username and password from you. And when I say phishing your username and password, I mean stealing it from you. So when you type in your username and password to that quote-unquote Microsoft login page, the bad guys are capturing that username and password. And then the bad guys are going to then try to use that username and password to log into your email. So how do you stop that? Well, if you have multi-factor authentication, guess what? The bad guys have the password, right? They have the something you know part. So they have one of your factors. However, they do not have that second factor. And this is why multi-factor authentication is so important, especially in email security, but really any kind of security. Multi-factor is massive. So that way you and your end users don't get compromised when they fall for a phishing email. And they will fall for a phishing email. It happens every day. And in some cases, you know, the end users are too, you know, I don't want to say scared, but they're embarrassed is probably a better word. They're embarrassed that they clicked on that link and they gave up their password. So they don't want to tell anybody, right? So you may not even know that one of your users fell for a phishing link and put in their password on that phishing site. And so this is why you have to have multi-factor, because the hackers don't have that multi-factor piece, that second factor. So anyway, you have to protect your email with an email filter or an email gateway, and you have to protect the login for your email system with multi-factor authentication. Those two pieces are pivotal, and you're going to hear me say multi-factor authentication a lot. It's going to sound like a broken record, but to keep your email secure, this is really what you have to do. Without this piece in place, again, you get phished. Now the bad guys have access to your account because you only have one factor, and the bad guys just stole what you know, which is your password. They stole that one factor. So this is where you really have to have, and this goes for your personal email too. Think about this. How many logins that you use in your personal life, how many of those are tied to your personal email address? Hundreds, right? Maybe more. And think about the types of logins that are tied to that email address. It's your bank or banks. It's your financial accounts. It's your 401k. It's, you know, it's your social media. It's your email, right? Like these are the biggest things that are tied to that email, right? You're using a single email address to log into all these different sites. Well, think about it. If I'm the hacker, I steal your password. I log into your email. Now, as the hacker, I'm in your email because you didn't have multi-factor. I'm in your email. Now I can see all your emails. I can read all of your emails and I can say, oh, this person banks at Bank of America. Okay, cool. Let me do a password reset on Bank of America's website. That password reset email comes to where? Your personal email, right? Now, all of a sudden, because they got into your personal email, they're getting into your bank. This is where it gets very scary. And this is why cybersecurity is so ridiculously important. Not just in the business world, but in your personal life too. You have to protect yourself. You have to protect your own assets. You have to protect your family, your money, right? Your money is tied to your email address, right? Your banking login is tied to your email address. And all you have is a password to get into your email? That's really scary. Really, really scary. And it only takes getting phished one time. Next thing you know, the hackers are draining your bank account. This is why, again, we preach these things so much in cybersecurity, but multi-factor is that layer that can stop that. So if you're listening to this and you've got a personal email account with Google, with Microsoft, with Yahoo, with whoever it is, make sure, and I think Google does this by default nowadays. Microsoft is getting there. Microsoft actually, I think, is going more passwordless or moving to pass keys, which is great. That's what we need in our cybersecurity world. However, there are still, you know, I'm not sure if Yahoo does this. You know, I'm not sure. So set up multi-factor. Go into your account settings. Set up multi-factor. So let's also talk about one more piece with multi-factor that I forgot about. And I needed to mention this. Multi-factor is, again, something you have, which could be your cell phone or a physical security key or token. So something you have, something you are, which is your biometrics, and something you know, which is your password. So you got those three factors, right? But even with those three factors, there are still insecure factors. One of those insecure factors is text messaging. Now, what's crazy to me is that a lot of banks still rely heavily on text message multi-factor. And this may be your only option in a lot of cases. I'm not saying don't use it if it's your only option. If it's your only option, use text message multi-factor where they text you a 6-digit code. Go ahead and use that. If there's no other options, use that. If you have other options, the preference from the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, they say to use an authenticator app. There are lots of different authenticator apps out there. There's one called Authy, A-U-T-H-Y. There's one called Bitwarden Authenticator. There's another one called Microsoft Authenticator. There's a Google Authenticator. There's a lot of these authenticator apps. And what you do when you're setting up your multi-factor is you scan a QR code with that authenticator app. It then generates, you know, some security keys, and then you've got a 6-digit code that changes every 60 seconds. This is very similar to getting a text message. However, text message is not considered secure. Text messages are oftentimes sent in clear text or plain text. They can be intercepted. There could be a SIM swapping attack, all kinds of different threat vectors with text messages. Again, though, I want to reiterate, if that's the only option for multi-factor that you have is a text message, turn it on. That's fine. But you need a second factor. So it's at least some sort of security, right? It's not the ideal, but it's better than nothing. So, but again, try to use an authenticator app wherever you can. If not, like your bank, unfortunately, use the text message multi-factor. If that's your only option, use it. It's better than nothing. But Facebook, you know, all these other social media sites, they have it to where you could use an authenticator app. So anyway, just really want to, you know, just express how important multi-factor is for everything that you do. And we're going to dive into way more. I know we're kind of just in the 101 pieces right now, but there's so much more to dive into. And I'm trying to keep these as short and sweet as I can, but there's just so much to talk about. Okay, so we talked about passwords, we talked about multi-factor, we talked about email security. So what else is there? Well, you can also throw in safe browsing, right? Am I browsing the internet safely? Am I going to suspicious websites? All different kinds of things like that. You just want to be very careful. Every site that you visit, especially if you click on a link, look at the URL. Is it really where, like, the page may look like it's a Microsoft page, but in the URL, does it say Microsoft.com up there? If not, it's probably a phishing site, right? So secure browsing is definitely a big piece of this too. I would say that endpoint security is much more important, but you still have to protect your systems and you have to block certain websites, right? And so safe browsing would be, you know, blocking any kind of website that you deem as malicious. And this could be a lot of different things. And really, if you just don't want your end users going to social media, because guess what? Social media accounts get hacked all the time. And you get this random, you know, DM from somebody that you've not talked to in 10 years, but then all of a sudden sending you a link. Well, if you're doing this on your work computer and you click on that link because social media is open at work and you click on that link and it does something really malicious to your computer, that could be a whole other can of worms. So again, safe browsing, block categories. You can block on a lot of firewalls. They have this capability where you can block all different, you know, website categories. They go from spam to malicious sites to recently created websites to park domains to all different kinds of things. So you want to block those that are just not relevant to your business and even to your home life. And this can help protect your kids too and your family, right? So if you have a somewhat sophisticated firewall at home, and not all the home firewalls have these capabilities, you do need something a little more robust than what your ISP provides. However, if you do have that capability, turn it on. You know, block those sites that are malicious right out of the gate. So safe browsing is a big deal. Patch management. This goes hand in hand with vulnerabilities that we talked about last week. So to fix a vulnerability in a system, you need to patch it, right? And Microsoft has patches that come out every second Tuesday of every month. And in that Patch Tuesday patch list, you can find hundreds of vulnerabilities that Microsoft is patching to remediate those vulnerabilities. So these are very, very important to stay up to date on. This keeps your systems way more secure. So if you get an update notification for some software or from, you know, Microsoft Windows, or if you're on a Mac or whatever and you're getting software updates and it needs to reboot, go ahead and do those, because those are very important security updates that will help protect your system from exploitation. If you don't patch and you ignore those for years on end, your computer will have thousands of vulnerabilities over time, which then makes your computer very easy to hack into, especially if you go to a public Wi-Fi, if you go to the airport and you haven't patched your computer in years, months, years, whatever it's been. Well, if some bad guy is sitting at the airport, you know, scanning the airport Wi-Fi for easy targets, your computer might be that easy target. So patching your system makes you less of an easy target. This goes for not only your personal life, but at work too. Patch anything and everything. This doesn't just mean your computer or your server. This means your firewall. Patch your switch. Patch your printers. Anything that can get a patch, you have to stay up to date on those patches. Otherwise, those systems, those devices, IoT devices, whatever it is, those become vulnerable over time. And now all it takes is a hacker to get into that one device because it was highly vulnerable. Now that attacker controls that device. Now they can try to hack into other devices on your network. So that's why it's so important to stay up to date with patches. There's all kinds of different patch management solutions out there for enterprises where you can deploy patches regularly, but staying up to date on all of your systems. And again, this means every device that's plugged into the network, not just your workstation. Every device plugged into your network needs to be patched on a regular basis, right? At least monthly, at least monthly. And another, of course, best practice, we've already touched on this a little bit, is protecting your endpoints. And an endpoint is simply a workstation, a server, a device. It could be any kind of device, but you want to protect those devices on your network with, you know, we used to call it antivirus, but now it's called endpoint detection and response, or EDR. So EDR is kind of the gold standard now to protect your endpoints. This could be a server, it could be a workstation, it could be Windows, it could be Linux, it could be a Mac, doesn't matter. You want to install an EDR tool on those systems to help protect them. And this endpoint detection and response, it has come a long way since the old antivirus days. Antivirus would base things on a signature. So a file that was malicious, it has a certain file hash. We can dive into a file hash later, but every file has a unique hash value. And so the old school antivirus would say, oh, that file hash or that hash value is malicious. And so they would create what they would call a signature for these malicious hash values. Well, all the bad guy has to do is change one little thing in the file, and it's got a new hash value. So then it could go right around that signature, right? So this is why the old school antivirus signature stuff is just not up to snuff. Endpoint detection and response uses those same file hash techniques, but it also watches behavior. It watches commands that are run. It watches the processes that these files execute. So if you download a file from the internet and it starts to do some weird stuff that's kind of out of the norm, then guess what? That EDR tool is going to block it and say, hey, this file that you downloaded is trying to do some really weird stuff. We stopped it because it looks really sketchy. You might want to check it out, or this could be malicious, right? So it does a lot more than just look at file hashes and things like that. It's actually watching the behavior of not only the user, but the files, the programs, anything that's running on your computer, any kind of script, anything like that. EDR is watching all that kind of stuff to look for any kind of anomalies and behavior differences and say, hey, this looks like it's kind of suspicious. And of course, it's using some AI to do some of that, machine learning, all that kind of fun stuff. And we'll dive into AI later. But anyway, endpoint detection and response goes way beyond the signature-based, you know, file hash type signatures. It does a lot more to help protect your systems. And that's why that's kind of the evolution. You'll hear the word next gen a lot in cybersecurity. It's the next generation of antivirus, if you will. Right, so endpoint detection and response. You'll also hear MDR, which is managed detection and response. This is when you have an EDR tool, but it's managed by a third party, right? So there's that kind of stuff. Then you also have XDR, which is extended detection and response. So they're throwing out all kinds of different acronyms. What you need to understand, though, is that it's protecting your devices, that's protecting your endpoints from any kind of malicious activity, whether that's a malicious file, or a malicious script, or malicious process that it's trying to run, anything like that that looks suspicious, that EDR tool is going to block it. So these are kind of some very, very basic, you know, kind of security 101 things that I wanted to cover today. I know we're already way into this podcast. I wanted to try to keep these around 30 minutes, but, you know, there's a lot to dive into. There's a lot of things to explain. So I want to make sure we're explaining it as best we can. So that is what we're going to do for today's podcast. That's all we're going to do for today's podcast. And next week, what we'll do is we'll jump into the networking concepts. I wanted to try to get to that today, but we're already way past time. So we'll get into network security stuff and kind of those general networking terms on next week's episode. But at least wanted to cover some of those, you know, security basics and good practices, best practices, fun stuff like that today. All right, folks, thanks for listening, and we will be back next week with episode 3.